Are dents and scratches putting a dent in your day? Introducing Roger Steen Crash Repairs Adelaide, your trusted solution for automotive woes. With over two decades of expertise, Roger Steen Crash Repairs guarantees top-notch service, restoring your vehicle to its former glory in no time. From minor dings to major collisions, our skilled technicians handle it all with precision and care, using state-of-the-art equipment and techniques.
Roger Steen Crash Repairs saved my car. It looks brand new.
Fast, friendly and reliable. I wouldn't trust anyone else with my vehicle. Don't let accidents slow you down. Visit Roger Steen Crash Repairs Adelaide at 14 Penner Avenue, Glynde, for quality service you can count on. And here's a special offer just for our listeners. Mention this podcast and receive a $100 discount on your repair. Roger Steen Crash Repairs Adelaide. Excellence in every repair.
Previously on the Game On Podcast.
We start off with most of our guests with a bit of a junior career, but you're still a junior yourself. So let's get into your current career at the moment and what's going on in cricket at the moment for you.
Current career, Joel, one game to go this year.
Yeah, big game, TK.
Yeah, Sturt Blues are in the grand final in Div 2, which so we've already earned promotion, which is good, but obviously you'd love to win the whole thing. So, yep. Just wrapping up Redback stuff too. Exit meetings and stuff, and then off to the UK in May. So,
where are you playing in the UK now, Tom? I refreshed the memory on that one.
Place called Dumbleton, so we play in the Cheltenham Premier League, which is in Gloucester.
Have you had previous experience there, or?
No, first time heading over, so it'll be a little bit different. Looking forward to it.
That's exciting. How did that all come about?
So our pom for Sturt this year, Tommy Borman, yes. Is from Dumbleton, so just linking up with him again. So that's how that all sort of came about.
Sportscast SA presents Game On. Game On. South Australian's destination for everything sports. Local, national and international sports. AFL football, soccer, basketball, golf, baseball, tennis, cricket, and any other sports played in this wide world. And we're going to have a blast doing it. So sit back, relax, and let's do this thing. Welcome to Game On.
Welcome to Game On. My name's Pete. Once again, Malcolm in the studio, and Tom Kelly, fantastic player in his own right, quite a good youngster, had success on the weekend for Sturt, and yeah, I see him getting good minutes in the Redbacks moving to the future.
Yeah, 60-odd on the weekend for Sturt, and Sturt didn't have to... Drawing the game was enough for Sturt to win the premiership.
Yes.
Congratulations to Brad Davis. Brad, here to save us, Davis, breaking the Sturt run record. He's now the highest run scorer for Sturt. He overtook Cam Borgas when he was 91. So yet another 120-odd not out from Brad. He's been an incredible player for Sturt. Personally, think it's absolutely farcical he didn't play more state cricket.
Yep.
Something I'll just still shake my head in disbelief. Yeah, but congratulations, and I'm sure the Kelly boys and a couple of the other Sturt boys, a couple of pubs, be very happy that Sturt delivered the chocolates. Of course, Port Adelaide got up in Div 1.
And we will talk about that, yeah.
Defeating Glenelg, the bridesmaids, in all three major comps this year in Agro. That was a surprise, and we'll come back to that.
We will. All right, let's move into Around the Grounds.
Around the Grounds.
All right, we're going to briefly talk the SANFL because we've already done our SANFL only podcast, which is also available on your podcast providers, and some tips and your smoky for the year. We're going to talk SANFLW and the soccer. We're hoping to get Daryl Wakelin as our past player, past legend segment.
Yeah.
We'll see how we go with that. If not, we've got a backup just in case. So we'll play that one by ear. But let's kick off with the AFL as we do most weeks. Adelaide, we'll start with them. Matty Nix re-signed this week or last week. Was it a good call or a bad call?
Oh, for me, a bemusing call. I just didn't think there was any need for it. I just think jump the gun. I know there's the talk during the year, but, well, hang on. What other job do you get appointed another year when you've still got a year to go? I just find, for me, football in particular, just jumps at shadows. Like, there weren't other clubs pursuing him. I just think it was personally unnecessary.
I am in the same boat as you. I thought it was I know they want to stop speculation and everything else that was going on. Obviously, there was reports that Buckley was potentially there, but I think that was a little bit of a media beat-up at the time. You know, I know they wanted a little bit of clear air, and as we've talked about previously in the podcast, in that these things are mapped out on a calendar weeks, months in advance, and the negotiation process had obviously been going on. So, yeah, I'm a bit of sitting on the fence call. Yeah. I think it was a good that it gives them clear air. I think it was bad that they probably could have let it go on a little bit longer. So, anyway, we'll stay with Adelaide. Adelaide lose a frustrating game against Geelong, and Stewart was just given free license to roam, and this is what worries me.
Bizarre. Like, hang on. Just because the matchup with Pedler hadn't worked, you then let him be the plus one. As close to, or if not the best reader of the ball in flight in the competition, to play what he wants to do. You know, why they didn't change it up? Fogarty wasn't getting much of the ball. Let's get Fogarty go and play him a bit more physical. Mm-hmm. I just thought it was appallingly out-coached, and if anything, out-coached themselves. I don't think Geelong did anything special.
Yep.
Just thought it was crazy.
Well, my one takeaway from Geelong was their theme, and talking obviously about themes, their theme for the week was that this is our home ground for the next next 4 weeks. They played it like their home ground. They came over here with that attitude that this was their home game, and yet Adelaide, it's their home ground, and they should make it a fortress. Frustrating.
It was, and just poor ball use. Look, I think, too, you can jump at stats. A bit to say O'Brien had 18 hits to advantage, bullshit. He hits the ball to his foot, and it's a rush junk kick forward.
Mm-hmm.
It's just gained a little bit of yardage and then intercepted. Geelong still actually got more open clearances, real hit-outs to advantage.
Yep.
Okay. Ruck for me is a huge weakness for Adelaide since 2017.
Yep.
And they've still got that as a weakness. I don't get it. Strawn's been on the list 4 years. They haven't had a decent crack at him. Riley O'Brien's an honest battler. For mine, he's not good enough, for goodness sake. Adelaide still maintained. They should have gone in balls up for Grundy, the first bit of Collingwood's salary cap. And I feel very strongly on that.
Fair call. Well, that was actually going to be my next point, is that where do you see teams winning games from? Is it first hands on the ball through the middle of the ground, or is it rebound off of the halfback flank?
It's a bit of both. I just think it's time for Adelaide to... I agree with the vanilla comment on their midfield. It is too similar. Get Laird back to halfback.
Yes.
Laird and Crouch are not a good mix together.
Yep.
Because they don't gain enough yardage. Play one of them on the ball, which is Crouch. So Laird goes back. For mine, that's an absolute no-brainer and should have happened. And by pig-headedness, it still hasn't happened. I think it's ridiculous.
Is it a case of Adelaide almost wanting to reinvent the wheel a little bit? Because last year they seemed to just play with that freedom and almost no real instruction as far as, I know there's game plans and all that goes on, but it was more of like, just go out there and play. Whereas this year they've tried to almost reinvent it a little bit with changes and obviously upping the game plan a little bit, and players are playing out of position. Like you said, Laird should be on that halfback flank.
I think they're worried about score against, which is true. It is too high. So they've tried to tinker with that, and I think it's affected their score four.
Yep.
And I think Thilthorpe is a massive injury.
In
it's
the
really
of
affected their balance.
Yep. No,
their balance is just out of whack.
Do we see someone like a Rankin or a Rochelle just here's a month in the middle, just do your thing for a month? Is that an answer, potential answer?
I think so. And you've got a question too with Adelaide. That everyone has a crack at Adelaide drafting. Well, how about the development coaching side of things? Pedler, Jones, McHenry, Murphy, O'Brien. How many of them have really progressed?
Mm-hmm.
But of the juniors in your terms, Pedler 2 years ago, shit, this kid's going to be a gun.
Yep.
It's plateaued. Rachelle hasn't kicked on yet. How many of them are going to become genuine A-graders, to become a Simon Goodwin, Tyson Edwards, mm-hmm. Andrew McLeod, Kane Johnson, genuine A-graders?
But is it a case, though, that Adelaide are comparing it to their successful years of back in 97, 98?
Maybe. And look, maybe in reality they're an average side and they managed to be almost good to average side last year. And in reality they're an average run-of-the-mill side.
Mm-hmm.
We're playing with – there's a lot of –
A lot of passengers.
Yeah, a lot of guys are just average players.
Okay,
so like Lachie Murphy has now played 100 games of AFL football. There's nothing against him. As a person, respect him greatly. Do I think he should be on an AFL list? No. You know, for mine, it's just he tries hard. I'm sorry, we're talking about the elite level. We're not talking about Adelaide Uni A3 reserves.
Yep.
You know, you win the best team man trophy for the, you know, the guy can't play.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is meant to be the elite. For mine, Adelaide have kept persisting with guys who just aren't up to it.
Okay, question without notice. Maybe a couple of questions without notice. Do Adelaide cut hard into their list again to find that right mix, as in maybe drafting a couple of top-end players or trading for top-end players?
Yeah, it's also who's available.
Yep.
It's easy to say that it's theory. It's who's agreed. Available.
Yep.
And that, you know, they made a big call and managed to get Rankin back. I'm sure they'll have a crack, Lukosius and some of those South Australians again. But it's, if you're at the moment, where do you reckon you're a chance to play in a flag, Gold mm-hmm. Coast or Adelaide? I know where I reckon I'd be.
Well, at this very moment, it's probably Gold Coast.
Yeah.
Where does Adelaide go from here? Because they've got the list that they've got right now. You said that, and I totally agree with you, they probably had a bit of a breakout year. Me being a Carlton man and suffering for 25 years with good talent but not going on.
Yeah.
Is it a case of this is the year Adelaide needed to have as a bit of a kick in the bum?
Yeah, and I actually thought that was a chance to happen before the year. I didn't have them in the A, and I actually thought they could fall away a fair bit. And well, at the moment, I know we're only two rounds in, but it's looking like at the moment that's going to be correct. Now, that's easy to say at the moment.
So, I'm not panicking.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody's panicking, really. If you know football, you know that these you're coming up against quality opposition. They're obviously out-coached against Geelong, and they were probably outsmarted in the Gold Coast.
It's also a fascinating comp in terms of how ruthless it is that it gobbles up older players who just suddenly go from one year to the next. Now, at the moment, big questions on side, bottom, how, and to a slightly lesser extent, Pendlebury.
Mm-hmm.
And for Adelaide, massive questions on Brodie Smith.
Well, and then they're trying to get back Rory Sloane, who you just you don't know what quantity he's going to be. He could come out firing and he might have a good month and then nothing, or he may not play again. I mean, they're really pinning their hopes on some older players at the moment. And
I think it's a comp which gobbles you up.
Yeah.
And now have a look at Collingwood. They've gone – now, they play Brisbane Thursday night.
Yep. We'll get to that in a minute. Yeah, absolutely. You know, all right, we better talk about Port Adelaide. Port Adelaide, Travis Boak plays his 350th for Port Adelaide, and it was a fantastic achievement and a fantastic win as well.
Oh, look, massively respected. You know, his loyalty to Port, you know, obviously Geelong tried to get him to go back. What he'd been through off the ground as well. Fascinatingly enough, they have Todd Marshall, who's a double effect of that this week
mm-hmm.
with his milestone. So two pretty incredible individuals there. But Travis Boak's just the heart and soul. Now,
Has he slowed down as much as Pendlebury and everyone else?
Yeah, maybe. I'm still not sure. It's a bloody long year to get through, and as I said, it gobbles up. At the moment, he might be right, because I think there were question marks last year. So let's just say, but yeah, they do look good. Look, Thatcher was probably the one on the weekend, did a very good job on Lynch.
Yep.
he might be a bit better player than everyone gave credit for. And at the moment, they look pretty handy.
Well, I've got down on my run sheet that Port are building very nicely. Yeah. I know we're only 2 weeks in and there's not panic stations for the Crows just yet, and there's probably not premiership aspirations for Port Adelaide just yet. But they are building quite nicely at the moment, and there's not too many weaknesses to be recruited from Port Adelaide because they've done it all this year.
No, they addressed their weaknesses, went out and covered it, and at the moment, big ticks for them.
All right. We won't review too many of the matches, obviously, from last weekend. Collingwood going down to St Kilda was a little bit of a surprise from that point of view. Sydney had a bit of a torrid affair with Essendon, who came out basically breathing fire and
had a
different approach to everything.
Yeah, I think that's got blown out of proportion. There was one incident of Wright where he did tuck in. Now, unfortunately now, it's really also hard that people are going to have to change your whole approach. He just turned to protect himself. He misjudged the ball in flight. I think he's unlucky personally.
We'll talk about that in our hot topics. And probably the surprise was that the Bulldogs put the Gold Coast Suns to the sword. But again, they're a little bit in that transition year, not only with coaching, but they're really good young players are starting to get good game time.
Yeah, I made the fatal mistake of tipping them. I should have gone go the home team. So yeah.
Yep. All right, let's get on to this week's matches. We'll whiz through them. Collingwood, Brisbane.
I'll go for Brisbane up there. You know, you just have to.
I think they're going to inflict some more pain on Collingwood and some more questions are going to get asked. Carlton North. Frio and Adelaide.
Fremantle.
Yeah, I'm going to go Frio as well. Essendon, St Kilda. Good game.
Yeah.
Just to see where everyone's at.
Yeah, so Max King's suspension did hold,
yep.
As I thought it should have.
And although it took about an hour and a half for them to make that.
Dragged on and on. I thought once it had dragged on that long, I thought he might have got off.
Yep.
Haven't read that transcript yet. So they also lose Mason Wood and Brad Crouch is now out for 6 to 8 as well, even though he didn't play last week.
Mm-hmm.
It's one other from last week. So they've lost a bit there. So it'll be interesting. Yeah, look, I'll probably still go St Kilda.
Yep. I'm sort of Ross the Boss as well.
King is massive, though.
It is, but he's been able to find players when they've been down as well. Probably the match of the round for me is Port Adelaide and Melbourne. Real good test for Port Adelaide, but Melbourne are in a little bit of form after their first or opening round debacle. They seem to have found a little bit, but
they lose May and Lever.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough ask.
Yeah, that's enough for
me. I'm picking Port Adelaide on that one, but I think it's going to be an entertaining game. Bulldogs v West Coast. Bulldogs.
Yep, I'll back the bye against West Coast.
Sydney and Richmond, or Richmond and Sydney.
Is it?
It's at the MCG.
MCG. Okay, I do give Richmond a chance, but I think Sydney have been pretty impressive so far. I'll go Sydney.
I think Richmond, as far as injuries go, is going to make it very, very hard. I know they were competitive for a good period of time against Port Adelaide, which is good, but I think Sydney are just another level all again. And Hawthorn v Geelong on the Easter Monday.
Yeah, I'll go Geelong.
Fair call. All right, let's get into the hot topics. We'll whiz through these pretty quickly. Collingwood in big trouble after a 0-3 with Brisbane in Brisbane this week.
Yes.
Where's it all gone wrong?
As I said, I just think it's gobbled up. The older guys was surprising. Just probably that it's funny how much the game's played above the head. Just a little bit of ball movement isn't quite been as clear. Moore has been average. It's made some shocking clangers.
Yep.
Look, I just think let's also remember how many close games they've won over the last couple of years. It's probably given a little bit of a false.
Oh, it's papered over the cracks a little bit, hasn't it?
Some extent, but yeah. I think side bottom for me is the one. Yep. I think he's a crucial player, and at the moment, he looks like he needs a motorbike with him.
Is it a case of teams have worked them out a little bit?
Maybe.
But their positioning looks just off everywhere you go, and if they're turning balls over, with some of their gun players who have delivered in the past, it makes it very hard to defend. A week is a long time in football, mate. Tasmania has exceeded expectations with 150,000 founding members. Are you kidding me?
It's been incredible, but they were very smart just making it $10. So a lot of people have just done it as a token mm-hmm. thing. But, geez, what a database to now have for your potential membership now.
Well, even if they get half of that.
Yeah, it'd be incredible. But what's happened on the weekend politically, the whole new stadium is in massive doubt. Mm-hmm. I have tried to get a comment from a particular person there, but he just... No, I don't think he can at the moment because I think he might be negotiating with both parties.
Right.
So he's a bit of court martial bowl, Lily, no score. He's Marcel Marceau.
Yep. Yeah, we'll let that one go through to the
camp. Yeah, so we'll follow him up and follow with interest. But
it's great for 150,000
people. Oh, it's incredible.
We want Tasmania in the competition.
But what happens with the stadium now? Mm. Now, does that therefore put the AFL under more pressure that if the government down there says no, that amount of interest, do we have to? Mm-hmm. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
Hey, here's a bit of a question from left field, is that does the AFL then throw in a potential merger club with them to make that deal happen?
I think that's what should happen.
Well, that's what I think should happen too. Yeah. But does this now become a bargaining chip?
Maybe, but I also think a lot of Tasmanians so many of them that are pig-headed. They don't want it to be a relocated side. They want it to be their side, mm-hmm. which I still think is crap. Because let's remember, Sydney was South Melbourne relocated. Does everyone remember that now? Mm-hmm. No. So I think that's garbage.
Brisbane Fitzroy a little bit.
I think it's crap. You know, I think North Melbourne or St Kilda or whatever should be down there.
Yep.
But too many teams in Melbourne. But that's
It's a whole other ballgame. We can talk about that at length as the season goes on. Neil Baum finishing up, previous guest of ours, finishing up at Richmond at the end of 2024. Who's next? Is he going to be a consultant somewhere along the line, maybe for a club or two?
No, I think you'll more than likely see retirement.
Yep.
And
that's fair call too because...
Well, he does turn 71.
Yeah, and health issues.
Yeah, and you may see a bit more of Barmy travelling and... Yeah, a bit more back in Adelaide where his wife does come from Adelaide. Yep. So, Neil will finish up.
Yep, that's fine. I thought I'd just chuck it on there that, whether it's a consulting role, part-time.
That's
a little bit of a, pick of the brain sort of scenario.
At the moment, I'll say it's retirement.
Yep.
At the moment.
Nah, fair call.
And I may have spoken about
it. Nah, yes. That's okay. Yep. Match review. Sicily only getting a fine. What a joke.
It's farcical. Like, if you get reported pleading guilty for kicking.
Yep.
You can't plead guilty for kicking and get nothing. Either don't report it in the first place.
Yes.
Or suspend him.
Yep.
It is bullshit what happened.
Yep. Totally agree with you. And then obviously on the run sheet I had here was Peter Wright's hit worth 3 games or more. He has got fourth. Obviously, we found that out before we came on air.
I've got real mixed ones about it. It's so hard. He's misjudged a ball in flight, turned and braced to protect himself, which you do right from when you first start playing at kids to protect. It's almost like we're going to have to change coaching right from everything. No, you don't turn to protect yourself. Mm-hmm. Well, who's going to want their child opening himself up to getting injured more as a kid? So mm-hmm. I think we understand that the head is sacrosanct and concussion legally.
Yep.
They just have to. We get that.
But footy collisions are footy collisions.
Just, out of this one, I'm still a bit buggered what else. Because I just do think it's instinctive. Now, Matty Lloyd saying, no, we just can't do that anymore. You've got to open yourself up and all that. Again, in theory there, but what about when you're learning footy? I just think, hang on.
But football is a split decision game.
My bit there is, let's be honest, there's a hell of a lot of split marriages and the female generally has the most influence on what the kid's going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she goes, hang on. There's too many kids getting injured in junior four. I don't want my Johnny playing footy.
Mm-hmm.
So let's also remember that. So I agree that we've got it, that concussion is the biggest issue in footy.
Yes.
The whole future of the game is in massive doubt.
Yes.
People out there who don't understand, have no idea what's happening behind the scenes legally.
Yep.
And have got their head shoved in under, you know, in
the
sand.
Pillow, yep.
Yeah,
yep.
And all that. So, yeah, I'm mixed on this one. I really am. Yep. I think he's trying to protect himself. I don't understand why.
Yep.
But, yeah.
And in reality, this is not going to be the last of what we've seen this year with these footy collisions, because there is that grey area.
You're now going to get people pull out more. And isn't that against our whole everything footy's meant to be?
Well, think about it. There's going to be supporters. There's going to be commentators.
Yeah.
There, everyone.
You were soft there. Yeah,
yeah, he pulled out. He was soft. He didn't go hard enough. It's a real fine balancing act. And I'm a bit with you with it being a hard one to gauge on the basis that it is a football split-second decision. And yes, like you said, the head is definitely number one priority, but you can't you can't regulate or rule out contact sport. It's just not practical.
As I said, anyway. I don't think they're thinking of the effect on juniors on whether they're allowed to play footy or not.
Absolutely. All right, we'll come back to that one. Obviously, through the year, it's going to be a hot topic. Yeah. But George Wardlaw was named Rising Star for round two. Yeah. Saw some of his highlights. Very impressive young man. He's going to be a gun, that's for sure.
He can play it.
All right, let's move on to the cricket. The Sheffield Shield final, Tasmania v Western Australia. Western Australia get the job done once again.
Tasmania got what they deserved. The stupidity of not preparing a road the week before to make 258 to qualify for the home final. Mm-hmm. As we had Tom Kelly on and we discussed the wicket, which, you virtually had to yell out, someone, are you out there?
Yep.
Because that's how bloody green it was.
Yep.
Ridiculous, extraordinary. Soon it was in Western Australia and yet again, you know, they've been there, done that, and just too good.
Absolutely.
Yeah, bizarre.
Sam Whiteman with 104 there, Hilton Cartwright and Darcy Short with 50 and 55 apiece, and Cooper Connolly with 90. Yeah. Really set it up in the first innings, and then from there onwards, it was just a matter of WA by how much.
Yeah, fair effort is to build, and that's Sam Whiteman's second 100 in Shield finals. I rate Whiteman. Like, all the talk on Bancroft, I was also thinking, hang on, there's another guy in WA who I think may even be more suited. So
absolutely. Yeah. Let's move on. David Warner snubbed in the draft for the 100 in the UK. What are your thoughts, mate?
Yeah, I'm surprised.
I'm surprised as well.
Yeah, I'm more just surprised. I would have thought someone would have, and well, for bums on seats as well. And yeah, I'm bemused by that. Yeah.
It's going to be an interesting one, the way that plays out.
We won't want to get Candace started on it. That'd be a soap opera. It'd be a 10-hour show.
Hang on, isn't she in the Australian Get Me Out of Here or in the jungle at the moment?
Yeah,
maybe she hasn't heard that he didn't get picked up.
Yeah, that's true. And there's a lot of people saying, please don't get her out of the jungle. Yeah.
Matty Wade obviously retires from Red Bull cricket after the Shield finals.
Good servant of the game. I wish he'd never seen a pair of keeping gloves. I wish he'd just played cricket as a batsman his whole career. So I think that would have been better for him and better for Australia.
Obviously, Matty Wade, fantastic. He's probably not going to get the gloves off of Alex Carey at the moment. So, I totally understand that. And he's probably looking at the short form of the game a little bit more, which is fair enough.
I always thought he was a very average keeper. He tried, but he was a stopper.
Yep.
It was crocodile gloves.
Yep. And if he's playing T20, his batting is obviously what's going to keep him in that squad, isn't it?
Yeah, but I just don't get that. When they're playing him and Inglis on the same side, it just doesn't make sense.
Yep.
You know, surely Inglis keeps. I just don't get it.
All right, mate, and the local cricket roundup, mate.
Yeah.
We did talk about it, obviously, at the top of the show there. Port Adelaide obviously getting up over Glenelg.
Yeah, Nick Benton with Pfeiffer getting man of the match for Port Adelaide. Liam Grieber, a couple of wickets, superbly coached in grade five at Prince's. Good to see Liam plays in another A-grade premiership side after getting...
Who was the coach, mate?
Sure on that one. after getting a previous winner of the David Hooks medal himself. So, Nick Benton wins that. Glenelg, though, it's quite But look, Glenelg are the best side on paper, mm-hmm. but they've now lost all three finals this year, the 2020, the one-day comp, and now the district final. So, yeah, really disappointing.
Close.
By Port Adelaide.
Yet so and, far.
Yeah. Yeah, on a side, just, yeah, you're clutching at straws going, hang on, that Glenelg side. And that a lot of guys got starts. I'll tell you what, I will give Nick Benton his due. Good bowler, Ben, Nick, don't get me wrong there, yep. but geez, he's caught and bowled to get Nathan McSweeney out the final. If you just go on and Google that, you'll find it. He's a fair
screamer.
Catch. Yeah.
Might have to hunt that one down and put it on the socials. Obviously, and Sturt, we did talk about, obviously, with Tom Kelly the week before, and he had a pretty good outing for Sturt
well done,
in the Division 2 grand final, which means they get promoted.
And well done to Brad Davis, as we said, becoming Sturt's highest run scorer.
Absolutely.
And Corey Kelly with 5-4 in the grand final as well. He's had a very good year as well, with both Kelly boys making the team of the year.
Absolutely. All right, let's take a very, very quick break. When we come back, we'll whiz through the SNFL. We'll talk about the SNFLW round 22 with the soccer and our past players, past legends. Darryl Wakelin, part one.
You're listening to the Game On Podcast. We'll be right back after this short break.
All right, we'll briefly touch base on the SNFL. We've already done an SNFL-only podcast, but we'll just touch on those matches. Nord v. Sturt on Thursday night at Cooper Stadium.
Yeah, I hope I'm wrong. I'll go for Sturt. And, yeah, I reckon Finn Hurd, so Jack Hurd's younger brother, also well coached at Princes over here at various times. All the best that
he might get a debut.
A league debut. Yep.
Yep. Fantastic. I might go for Sturt as well, as much as I don't really want to. But no, I think they've shown through the preseason that they are a team to watch this year. North Adelaide v Centrals.
Yeah, toss of the coin job.
At Prospect.
I'll go Central. So it's a toss of the coin.
Yeah, I'm going to go North. Yep. Home ground.
Yeah,
round
that's
one.
Fair enough. Yep.
Panthers v Adelaide at Flinders Uni.
Adelaide.
I'm going to go Adelaide as well. The Eagles v West Adelaide at Monteen Oval or Kia Oval.
Eagles.
I'm going to go the Eagles there. And probably the match of the round, which is on Friday, is Glenelg v Port Adelaide.
I'll go Glenelg.
I'm going to go Glenelg there as well. We've obviously done our tips. Who's a bit of a smoky or flying under the radar for you this year? A couple of teams maybe?
Oh, I think Centrals. I like how they've recruited. I think Harry Grant somehow didn't get picked up.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're the one. Mm-hmm. I probably the other one, because I'm tipping Glenelg, the other one is Sturt.
Yep.
It's not flying under the radar, but I think they're the other distinct challenger.
For me, it's Centrals. I'm like you. I think they've recruited well. We saw last year that we weren't 100% sure with what they did. They did make the finals.
Yep.
I think they've recruited relatively well. And for me, my watch and see is probably Woodville West Torrens.
Yep.
Just not 100% sure as to potentially, you know, what might happen with them this year. A couple of key players who have obviously retired or moved on, but Sam Jacobs obviously getting his opportunity at Woodville West Torrens. And, yeah, it's going to be an interesting watch.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to the SNFLW, mate. Round four matches. Glenelg just getting over the line against West Adelaide.
Yeah, in a real close one. Yeah. Probably surprised that it was so close.
Yes.
Full credit to West Adelaide. They've been the surprise packet overall.
Mm-hmm.
But Glenelg, just that little bit more depth, you know, as we said.
Yep.
You know, Bates coming back from Collingwood. Violet Patterson, young Paddo's daughter. Stephen Patterson's daughter, you know, so, yeah, know that Glenelg are going well.
Absolutely. Nord bouncing back against North Adelaide.
Yeah, close there for a while, and then a couple quick goals after half-time blew it open, and the Red Legs got home there.
Absolutely. South Adelaide getting the job done against Woodville West Torrens.
Yeah, look, South started a bit slowly the first couple of games, but they're just starting to put it together, and you know, I thought they were overall the best team last year.
Yes.
So I was surprised with that first couple. So I'm not surprised that they're regrouping.
Starting to click into gear. And the game of the round at the time was Sturt v Central Districts. And Sturt really came out of the gates flying, winning that game there.
Yeah, young Indy Rashid absolutely dominated.
We put her stats up on our Facebook page, and it was impressive to look at.
Yeah.
She's going to be a gun not only at the SNFL level but at the AFL level.
We'll be in the top three players in AFLW within 3 years.
You heard it first, folks. Round five matches. We've got North Adelaide v Centrals.
I'll go Centrals.
Sturt v Norwood.
I'll go Sturt.
Is that Thurban and Oval?
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
I know because Sturt's obviously out of action at the moment with their regrassing or resurfacing. Yeah. The Eagles v the Bloods, West Adelaide.
Yeah, I'll go the Bloods.
I might go West Adelaide there as well. And the Tigers v the Panthers, another really good game.
Yeah, real good game. Look, you probably got to go Glenelg because it's home, but, geez, that should be a really good game.
And that game's obviously part of that entire Friday, Good Friday games down at Stratorama Oval there. So, yeah, I'm going to go Glenelg as well. Ladder positions, we've got top of the table, Glenelg at the moment, the only undefeated team with four. Geez, what is it with Glenelg? The water down there's certainly changed.
Yeah.
West Adelaide sitting second on the table, which is what we've said. You know, they've improved. South Adelaide, Norwood in the top four. Sturt just outside the top four. And North Adelaide yet to register a win. So ladder's starting to take shape a little bit. And obviously three or four teams there with 4 points. So,
yeah,
you know, you don't want to be dropping too many games. Let's move on to soccer. Round 22, Adelaide United playing Western United at Hindmarsh Stadium on the 29th.
Big game.
Huge game.
Yeah, they've just got to... They've got to put some wins together to get an outside chance to make the six. Look, I think it's probably too late, but...
It's about morale now for the next season, isn't it?
It's always hard on that one because I think there's generally so many changes each year.
Yep.
You blink and there's change in soccer. So, it's a hard one in that one.
Well, I'll see if we can get Mary on for a comment on that one as the season goes
good
on.
Good idea.
Where next for Adelaide United, do you think? Do they look to recruit heavily?
I think they do have to get a bit more experience back. Like losing Goodwin, they probably haven't. Obviously, you can't replace him as a player, but I think they're probably lacking a bit of experience as well.
And just to finish us off, the Matildas, Katrina Gorey spotted on crutches after suffering an injury while playing for West Ham. Not good for the Matildas with Paris Olympics coming up very, very soon.
Yeah. Won't see on that one because crutches are just precautionary. Just wait and see. Look. Yeah. We hope she's okay.
Absolutely. All right, let's take a very, very quick break, mate. When we come back, Darryl Wakelin, part one.
You're listening to the Game On Podcast. We'll be right back after this short break. Past players, past legends, past legends.
Tonight, we are greatly pleasured to welcome aboard Darryl Wakelin, of course, Port Adelaide SANFL. Then, interestingly, Adelaide didn't play a game at Adelaide. We'll get to that, Wakes. 115 games at St Kilda, and then back to Port Adelaide, 146 games at Port. Of course, a member of the 2004 Premiership side and also a member of the 2007 Cliffhanger Grand Final side, Wakes. Welcome aboard, Darryl.
We're not going to talk about that, are we, now? That's a distant memory.
Yeah.
We'll bring that up later.
Talking about it all, ask as many questions as you like.
All right, mate. Welcome aboard, mate.
Pleasure.
We're just softening you up a little bit, but like we do with all of our guests, we like to sort of find out where you started, and obviously you were born in Whyalla, and some of your junior clubs that you played at.
Off to Kimber.
Yeah, so moved to Kimber as you know, six-month-old twins we were. Mum and Dad had moved to Whyalla. Dad completed his Boilermaker apprenticeship, so always off the land in Kimber. And so we ended up back in town. And, Kelly Footy Club was one of four football clubs in town and very successful. The Kelly Roosters right through the 60s, 70s, 80s. They had some absolute star players. So, that's where it all started. My old man was a coach there and president of the football club, so very involved in the community, very involved in that football club. And then right through to the age of 12 when we went to we moved to Port Lincoln and played with the Boston Football Club down there. So They were the two clubs that really we sort of cut it through our junior career.
And you did most of your schooling at Port Lincoln, mate?
Yeah, so we did end of year eight at Kimber Area School, and then we went to the high school, Port Lincoln High School. So,
yep,
really great grooming ground down there. Some really high quality footballers that we come up against. Some really outstanding junior Indigenous players that we played against. Obviously, the famous Mallee Park Footy Club.
Yep, yeah, yep.
And you know, against the Burgoyne boys, Dads and the Pickets and all them the Davies over there, famous football names in the Port Lincoln area. So, yeah, we were playing A-grade footy at sort of 15, 16, played in the local Mortlock Shield as 16-year-olds. And that was really a taste of sort of, you know, really playing against adults, getting a little bit of an understanding where the benchmark was, where we thought we could take our footy, and obviously a massive Port Adelaide zone over there where, you know, rich recruitment. Obviously Norwood these days, but still a very rich recruitment ground for Port Adelaide back in the day.
And back then as juniors, were both you and Shane down in defence, or one at one end, one at the other?
Bit of everything, really, Rawley. I mean, being a little bit taller, I suppose you get thrown into the ruck. So I was probably more the ruckman. Shane was sort of more centre half forward, but I was a little bit taller than him, a bit more physical. So that's where I played majority of my junior footy, and until really the ages of 17, 18, which we can get onto further. But that was sort of where I cut my teeth. I played forward a little bit, but that was my craft. I loved it. I loved being a ruckman as a junior, but and I was a state ruckman with Sam Smart in 91 under Russell Ebert, Pete Carey, and Jimmy Fantasia.
I reckon Howes, Tom Harley, was that Howes' year as well?
Harley was a year or two after.
So that Fander's year was
Rusciuto, Benny Hart, Sanderson, Sean Wellman, Scott Burns.
Fair side.
I'm sure I'm missing a few. I think there was about 10 that went on to play, 8 or 10 played over 200 games. Nick Holland. It was one of them teams out of the box. We won the championships that year, and great memories even to this day of and still some great friendships with all of the guys, Rue and Benny Hart. You don't see them as much around the place, but certainly a lifelong bond with them guys.
Oh, you'd see Rue at Prince's in the last few years, and when he was losing his kids at Prince's was always entertaining, 2 weeks. And that was one big Saturday morning where he lost two. That was very amusing, yes. It's a fair effort by Rue. We said he had six, so he could afford to lose a couple.
Fair call. Yeah. So getting to Port Adelaide, was that through the 15 Samboy Cup and then the 17s, or straight into the 17s?
Yeah, so Samboy Cup, we would come across in the 15s and play Samboy Cup. So that was really the start of the Port Adelaide football program. We would come across and do junior programs in the off-season. But it progressed through there. I missed a year with football when I was 15, so I missed that Samboy Cup year just through back. I think I had stress fracture of the back looking at it.
Is that growing just so quickly, or?
Yeah, it just grew through that period, sort of 14, 16. So, we were invited to come across. Every year there was two, three or four lads invited across. Bobby Clayton was a great clubman at Port Adelaide who
fantastic.
Spent a huge amount of time on the peninsula, who was a very big part of it, along with Don McSweeney and a great mate of ours, Chris Natt, as well, who we live with when we first come down. So, as it was back in the day, you boarded out. They were kind enough to pay our board for the first 12 months, and that really gave us a grounding and got a bit of a footing into, you know, cutting our teeth with 17s and 19s football in that first year in 91.
You're playing finals then with Port then?
Yeah, so we played 17 under 17s, Shane and I, for the first half of the year. And when I came back, I from Till Cup experience, we were we were put up into the 19s. Shane was sort of in that next sort of five or six as emergency to go to Darwin for the Till Cups. He missed out. But we both were promoted to the under-19s halfway through the season. We went on to win the premiership that year against South Adelaide. And, so once again, I played, all three brothers played in that premiership 19s. My older brother, Michael
had
come down two or three years earlier. So he was sort of top age 19s at that stage. And, so that was an amazing first year of out of home in Adelaide and working out what sort of future you could have. But there was about 10 of us invited out to Crows training
at
the end of the Crows' first season. And it was still – that 91 Till Cup team was still part of the moratorium. So the Crows had access to a certain amount of players. So about 10 of us. 10, I reckon
it was, yeah.
Yeah, about 10, I think, yeah. So they'd used up a few, and then they still had another five or six that they could take. So there was Scott Burns, Sam Smart, Peter Turner, Rue, Hardy, Wellman, guys like that were all invited. Sanderson. There was about 8 or 10.
I may still get into Cornsy, where Cornsy thought Scott Burns was just a run-of-the-mill halfback flanker. to this day, I saw enough from it Nord that I said, geez, Cornsy, he was always way better than that. I'm still bugged by that one.
I think he got drafted a year later. It was got drafted to Collingwood. There was a couple. There's always a few that get through the net, isn't there?
Yeah.
So that was sort of I never really felt at home there during the pre-season. It was just one of them things. It was Port Adelaide and them. And as a Port Adelaide person, all you were focused on and your priority was to get a league game for Port Adelaide. And that was my focus going into the 92 season as a pretty raw sort of 78-kilo, 6'4" ruckman transitioning into centre forward sort of player at that time. That's where I played all the next couple of years.
Okay.
Did you have any contact with John Cale, obviously, during that time?
Well, Jack was always – I played one or two reserves games at the end of the 92 season, so I promoted up. But it wasn't really until that 91-92 preseason where I was in the senior squad. You know, Nathan Buckley was still around the place. We were coming off, you know, the three in a row, 88, 89, 90. We had a quieter one, 91, and then 92 obviously ended up being a premiership year. So I played all the pre-season comp that year. And then I did a knee through the 92 season, just a cartilage, and I missed out on the draft in 92. My twin brother was drafted to St Kilda. 31. But then I got my knee. It was a really poor finish to the year, so I missed a lot of football. Once again, had another big pre-season. I was picked up the following season in 93. Through that period, a lot of us were sort of playing reserves footy. That was what you did.
Yeah, I know. It's quite incredible.
That's where you learn your trade. Craft.
Yeah,
you learn your craft, learn your trade there. And that was great grooming, really, under Brian Fairclough there. And obviously getting a touch of the brilliance of Jack and getting an understanding of the messaging and what's required. So, but some amazing leaders through that period too, being in that senior squad, amazingly led by Coochie Phillips, who retired at the end of the 93 season. Which opened up an opportunity for me. But Timmy Ginover and Steve Williams, Rog Delaney, all them legends of our club who, you know, were obviously a huge part of that success from sort of 88 through to 98, really.
Now, obviously, you touched on what we were talking about earlier with you being an Adelaide player initially. How did you find sort of going back and forth between Adelaide and Port? We know the rivalries there and the us and them and all of that jazz that goes on with Port and the Crows, but how did you find as a player sort of going from one program to another program and back and forth throughout the year?
Yeah, good question. Look, I was a naive young 17-year-old, quite immature. I was living with my two brothers. It was sort of up to me, really. Tim Johnson interviewed me before they drafted me and said, "Where are you going to play as a footballer?" And I said, "Well, you guys are the recruiters. You tell me. I'm just a 17-year-old kid here trying to work it out." So, he said, "You're not going to be big enough to be a ruckman." And I said, "Well, David Hines has had a pretty successful career as a ruckman." But probably knew deep down I had to find a new position, and that's when I started playing full forward, centre half forward. I struggled a lot going back to Crows. I sort of pretty much made a decision, even though I'd trained in that 93 season, was drafted in 93 season. Yep. I made a conscious decision not to go to training. And back then it was really only that top 34 or whatever. Yep. Who were contracted, so I didn't get a dollar. There was no incentive, really, unless you're in that top squad. I wasn't playing league football at the time, so it's not like I was going to jump out of the reserves and straight into AFL, which I think it did. I'm sure you got a story.
Yeah, no, it did. It happened a bit.
Couple of times.
Yeah, both ways. Andrew Eccles went one way, and Tom Harley, incredibly, he's won a league game for Port, played – reserves for Nord 2 weeks later. So, it did happen. There was
a bit of that.
Aaron Keating was another one.
Look, to be quite frank, as a Port Adelaide, it was, I was right amongst that journey of, the initial approach to going to the AFL. That was before the Crows went in, and then there was just simmering in the background. So that was there in the background, and I never felt comfortable at Adelaide. And I received a couple of little injuries through that year. Never really got fully fit again. And I was doing year 12 that year as well. And first year pharmacy that year.
Yeah. And you're a bit more academic than the average Port Adelaide person, too, Wakes. Surely you would have fitted in more at Adelaide than that, mate.
I was probably persistent, pretty persistent, like a lot of Port Adelaide people. And I didn't really believe that I could maybe have a career at AFL. It was still that amateur sort of sport, and the money was good if you played 22 games of footy for the year.
Yeah.
If you weren't and you weren't sort of contracted, it was sort of, there was no money. So it was very much a hedge your bets sort of period in my life as a young kid, just trying to work it out on your own,
And then 94, you make it into the Port Adelaide League side and have the ultimate success.
And win the Jack Odie medal.
Yeah.
Yeah, amazing year. Still some of my great memories to this day. We have our 30-year reunion this year, which will be in August. It's on my birthday weekend, actually, quite conveniently. And it's Port Adelaide versus the Eagles down at Alberton, so that's going to be a great catch-up with all old teammates. It was an incredible year. I was in second-year pharmacy. I'd been delisted by the Crows the start of that year or the end of 93, and I just thought, I've just got to get myself as fit as I can, the fittest I've ever been. I have my brother who's moved to Melbourne.
Kilda, yep.
He's good enough to be on an AFL list. Well, I'm good enough to be on an AFL list, but I just had to put some games together. So, and that's what we did. It was certainly a bit of a, I think even Jack will say, it was a bit of a motley crew that we pulled together that year. We had... a core group of premiership players, the guys who were sort of by that stage, 26, 27, Timmy and Rog and Rowan, and Rowan was back from St Kilda, Rog was back. And so it was a core group, but then you had, probably four or five of us young lads who are sort of 18 years and under, Troy Olsen, Andrew McLeod, Simon Pedler, Steve Carter, It was a Till Cup mate of mine.
Good player.
So you had that. They'd brought in this youth, which they would do most years, but there was a bit of a blockage the last couple of years because there was so much experience at the top end. But Coochie retired the year before, Greg yeah. Phillips. That gave me my opportunity at centre-half back after finishing the 93 season at playing down back in the reserves. I really launched that and made it my position. And even though I broke a collarbone mid-season, missed about three or four games, but then got back and got some fitness. And we had a really good run into finals, and albeit some pretty horrific results. One horrific result in the finals against the Eagles. Eagles have been the top side. They were the form side. They were really the benchmark. We had beaten them by about 10, maybe even 12 goal at home in the last minor round at Alberton. Gave them a real touch up, but then they smacked us by 80 odd points in the
second semi.
And then we were able to bounce back, and we got over Central's in overtime.
It was overtime, wasn't it? Yeah,
yeah, overtime game, and then we were able to get through, and then we smacked Central's in the prelim to go into the final.
And of course, the grand final. Geez, Timmy G was just smart, sucked in, I think it was Kennedy, but either way, sucked in a Woodville West Torrens player who retaliated. Because 2 minutes before three-quarter time, you're six goals down. All of a sudden, you kick two goals in that last minute. You come in with a bit of impetus, where if that hadn't happened, you'd end a quarter time 6-0. It's a totally different game, as we, you know.
Yeah, no, it's so true. Everyone asks Timmy Ginver. Wow, I mean, he was a Till Cup captain, twice All Australian in his younger years, and they say what was so great about Timmy? He didn't have speed. He couldn't kick more than 35 metres. And you looked at him and you go, well, what? He's not a tall guy. But he had the most brilliant hands. He knew exactly where the ball was going.
Yes.
He knew the moments. He knew the big moments in a game.
Ferocious competitor.
He was a ferocious competitor and just an incredible leader.
Yeah.
And like a lot of great leaders, they have this great balance between just being an absolute competitor, but also having the ability to put your arm around you and to have a laugh and to bring the team along with him. So, that was a massive moment in the game. We were able to steady. Get back, and we just thought we kept chipping away, and we thought we'd nearly kicked ourselves out of it in that third quarter. I think we kicked maybe 9 or 10 points, and we're still a couple goal down at three-quarter time, and Scotty Hodges had had about two touches, and I think Jack might have had a few words to him, saying we've got a pretty handy full forward sitting on the back flank, so if you're not going to get a kick... and that, we might send him forward, and that was Mark Tyler,
who obviously
was a outstanding footballer for our club, who, you know, quite amazingly, we talk about the Jack Cale as a coach, and you know, the way he was able to understand the connection between the players and how important a player like Mark Tyler was for that squad, and just found a way to find a spot for him in the team. And he had an outstanding year as that sort of half-backer with Norther. I was centre-half-back, and we had some real experience down back.
Mate, you sort of stole my thunder a little bit there. I was going to talk about how we've had Port Adelaide guests on before. We've had Timmy on, and we've obviously talked about Jack before, and even we've talked about how Port Adelaide on paper haven't really been the strongest side, but Jack was able to get the best out of everybody, and... it showed time and time again that you were really playing for the coach, but also he knew how to get the best out of you as well.
Yeah, Jack was a pretty complex character. And as a young guy coming in, you just wanted his respect. You never knew when you had it. I probably still don't know these days. He was that kind of guy, but that's what drove you as a player. You even talked to guys like Timmy and all that. They felt exactly the same way. He had this personality where he would he would just believe in you. You felt you could just do anything. But at the same time, he had you playing on edge, and that your position was not guaranteed, and that you had to keep performing at the level that was required of a Port Adelaide League footballer. And something you can't really touch or see, but that's the effect it had on me, certainly as a young guy. What an incredible story that has been for over such a long period.
So many players, and you get that the comment just consistently gets made, not only publicly like we are now, but privately even more so, where the Port guys say, you know, the mystique of Kale, where he could sell to an Adrian Setre that you'll beat this Platten bloke and things like that, which is just bullshit to have managed to sell it, but he was the master at doing it. And how many times Port had win, and you'd look at the Port side on paper as a Nord man and go, geez, how in the hell? Yeah. But it was the master of, and Jack was always keep it simple. His game plan was never anything particularly scientific or anything like that, but geez, you kept winning when it counted.
Yeah, and we had a pretty handy full forward there for quite a number of years. Yes. Which, you know, admittingly got us out of trouble in a couple of those matches. Admittingly also that he, you know, like I said, in that 94 one, he had 2 touches to 3/4 time. So just shows the heart of a guy like that. Big performer, incredible reader of the football and incredible finisher under pressure. So, that was a pretty amazing time to be a part of that. To get that win really gave me a launching pad and gave me that confidence to go that next step in my career.
And, of course, you would have been rapt to get picked up by St Kilda for the chance to play with Shane again, mate.
Yeah, look, it was good. I'd actually said to the Crows when they were looking at drafting me that they picked me at 11, I think, in that 93 preseason draft. And Carlton were going to take me at number 12 as a centre-half forward. I was playing all my game centre-half forward, full forward. But then I'd actually said to them, look, just let me pass. I'd like to go to Melbourne. I'm going to get over there, whether I go to Carlton or whether St Kilda can do a deal. So that's the way it ended up. It was part of that whole Lockett deal. I'd been on the list before, so I could be listed by Fremantle. And then obviously it was a pre-arranged trade deal, which we see quite common these days.
Yeah.
But it was a hell of a complex deal involving Lockett first committing to Sydney and then a heap of draft picks. And then I was the last piece that traded to Sydney for Scotty Waters and then on traded onto St Kilda as part of that whole draft thing.
Yeah, it's quite complex, those deals. You've really got to go through them with a fine tooth comb to work out sort of winners and losers in the end, because it's so bloody complex.
And now there's points attached to it as well, which makes it even harder again.
Yeah, I admit as a footy moron, I may have gone through those, a few of those on various times. So, and then you've ended up at St Kilda. What were your first thoughts there and that at St Kilda, Darren?
Oh, look, I was super excited. I knew there was change happening, obviously under Stan Owes and, Andrew Plimpton was president at the time. Sadly, passed away this week. He was such a lovable guy, just a driven guy, just with such enthusiasm for the football club to make them better. And through his leadership and Stan's leadership, we really we backed in us younger guys. There was probably about I think there was something in that 95 year, 7 of us under the ages of sort of 19. But they backed us in. They picked us. The likes of Joel Smith, Ozzie Jones, Matty Lappin had some games under the belt.
Tony Brown, I reckon.
Tony Brown was playing. So, and then you had the older guys who were still had a lot of footy. Obviously, Spider Everett was still 19. And then you had Lowe, Harvey, Burke, Winmar, Shanahan, guys like that. Danny Frawley in his last season. So
yeah,
it was a very exciting time. It was, but you know, with a club that had been starved of success, you knew it was going to take a little bit of time, and then the biggest challenge was going to be able to holding it all together and to continue to back the young kids and support them in the way the club should, and basically to keep that group together for another sort of, you know, 8-10 years. And that's always the challenge, isn't it?
Of course, you then played in St Kilda's 1996 AFL Ansett Australia Cup.
The highlight of the career, surely.
One of the most ugly trophies ever there's been. It was as good as those AFLX trophies. Wakes, you see the St Kilda Sky standing next to it, just sort of going, geez, that's ugly sort of thing. Yeah.
Well, it was back in the day. We sort of, being a young side, the club really felt a priority to win as many of them games and to be as fit as we could be coming into the preseason. So obviously back then it wasn't a round robin. You had to have a knockout. So you had to win four games to win the thing, which was always a good thing for a young group. So yeah, to win that, there were some pretty ugly ones with the Wizard Cup. But good memories. I always thought it was good, a good sign for the club, especially a young team, that if you could have some momentum going forward, and as you get more established as a squad, they're probably not as important. But
yeah, yep, that's
when
fair.
When you have a young group and you're wanting to really show something and give the supporters a belief in a young squad, I think it's really critical. And that was massive for us in '96, albeit a pretty average season. I think we only ended up winning 8 games after that, but still there were signs, and just showed you had to get another, you know, 30, 50 games under these young legs, and we could give it a real crack.
And of course you did in '97. You had it, you know, finished minor premiers, unluckily lost Everett, but getting injured, that was crucial.
Before you get to that, obviously you debuted in round 195. By '97, you know, you played 17 of the 22 games in that season. Did you sort of find that during that year you found your spot, you know, because '96 was a little bit of an off year, but did you find '97 you'd found your way in the AFL, you'd finally made it?
Yeah, I mean, you never really think you make it in AFL, but '96, I sort of just wavered. It was probably a little bit directionless, probably, to be quite frank. I didn't really understand how good a player I could be at that level. I worthy of it? Was I deserved of it? So it was sort of probably that mindset looking back on it. Start of '97, we ended '96, we traded in a few players, and it was sort of, I wasn't getting a game early in the year, wasn't fit enough, wasn't focused enough, and I just remember about 4 rounds in and saying I just need to really have a crack at it and get myself strong and fit, and that was the real start of thinking that, come on, stop messing around, I need to really give this a proper crack, and I'm only letting the club down. I need to perform, and I was a young up and coming leader at the time, and I just needed to get my consistency right.
Was footy full time by then, Wakes?
I probably put a lot of pressure on myself as a 22-year-old, but
was footy full time by then, Daryl?
More '99 when Tim Watson came in, which we'll touch on later. But it was sort of more that amateur, semi-professional. Train Monday, Tuesday, Thursday nights, maybe one morning, rehab on a Sunday, play every Saturday afternoon.
Were you working at all then?
I was working at a pharmacy. I'd taken a couple of years off from study, and I was working at a local pharmacy. Probably socialising a little bit too much, really, and make the most of the...
Yeah, you're always pretty good at that, Wax. Yep.
So, it's all part of the journey. But '97 was a really, and 98 for that matter was really a couple of really special years. We were probably, you know, top two teams in the comp, and we had a huge run, 10 in a row, coming into that final series. And
yeah, losing like Everett, as we
lost
said.
Lost Everett, yeah. And we lost Lazar Vidovic, who was
yeah, that's right.
They were a good tandem ruck pair, and Spider was resting forward as well. So, yeah, it put a lot on Brett Cook, who was our third sort of string
ruck. Broken
Hill
boy.
Who did a great job in the prelim. Corey McKernan went down and did his shoulder from memory.
That's right.
We thank Wakes there for part one of his two-part series, because that interview did go a fair while. We covered a lot of stuff, didn't we?
It's pretty eloquent, Darryl, too. I really appreciate that. As I said, he's a bit too smart to have played with Port. You know, he's past plasticine. You know, he's a pharmacist. Like, yeah, come on, shouldn't be playing for
Absolutely.
Port.
Very interesting, obviously, yeah, as great. Part of part one, finding out, and I didn't actually know this, that he was actually on Adelaide's list initially too. Yeah. So, absolutely fantastic there.
Very honest on himself and his doubts and all that. And never played himself up much, Wakes, and probably, if anything, that little bit more belief he could even be better. But 261 games. He had a distinguished AFL career, Darryl. So, yeah. Rapt to have him on board.
Absolutely. Part two, obviously, coming up next week. Let's take a very, very quick break. When we come back, we're going to go on to Happy Days.
I'm Stephen Rowe, and you're listening to the Game On podcast.
Happy Days.
All right, let's kick off Happy Days today with Happy Birthday this week to it's almost a Port Adelaide theme podcast today.
Yep.
Robbie Gray, 30th of March, pick number 55 in the 2006 National Draft.
Gun, absolute gun, and yeah, it's a story there. It was very nearly a crow, but nah, he's a gun.
Doing a little bit of research, as we do on this, I knew a lot about Robbie Gray's career, but there's some stuff in there that I didn't realise, and one of them was that he impressed during his 2006 TAC Cup with the Oakley Chargers, kicking 56 goals and obviously played in the Vic under-18 side. But he was not seen as a fancy draft option due to his unfashionable style of play, his chances, and took a little bit of a hit when he missed the draft camp due to injury. However, did attract interest from Port Adelaide after impressing their recruiters. Basically, the head recruiter, Mick Moylan, was impressed with his off-field discipline, with Gray maintaining an 8-hour job as well as playing football.
Yeah, I know.
I know it's a different time.
No.
But for a young fellow like that to still be doing that, I can see why Port Adelaide picked him up.
Yep, and yeah, as I said, very nearly a crow. Yes.
Let's move on. Cricket, 1981. Sir Viv Richards scores a century in his first test in his home of Antigua.
Love the way he walked out to bat. If anyone exuded self-confidence in sport and was intimidating by his own actions, was Viv Richards.
Gun of West Indian cricket, and yeah, going back and watching some of those.
His just whole demeanour, that, you know, the famous story about him going out to toss the coin with Grave, and he Cowdery captaining West Indies, we don't need your team sheet, play whoever you like. He just backed himself, and yeah, the swagger that he delivered.
Yep, and yeah, if you get a chance to go back and watch any of that, you'll see it for your own eyes for
the
sure.
The other famous one was in a county game, and he played, missed it a few times, and this bowler, you know, giving him heaps, is trying to say, you know, it's the red thing and that sort of thing. And
don't poke the bear.
Yeah, Viv might have hit his next ball into the next suburb, and Viv turned around and said, well, you know what it looks like, go find it.
I like that one.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to basketball. A name that we've brought up a few times: in 1990, Michael Jordan scored 69 points. Fourth time he scored 60 points or above in a game.
Certainly my favourite ever basketball.
Mine too, yeah, mate. Absolutely. Yeah. All right, let's move on to golf. Jack Nicklaus makes his debut in 1990 in the PGA Senior Tour,
yes,
with a 71 1-under first round at Desert Mountain. Wins the event by 4 strokes over Gary Player.
He was unbelievable, you know. It was probably Tiger then took over the mantle from Jack.
Yes.
Jack's one of the all-time champions.
Absolutely. And this segment is basically reliving some of these great players.
You haven't mucked around with champions on this one, mate.
No, I haven't. And just to finish us off, in 2001, swimming at 15 years, 9 months, American swimmer Michael Phelps breaks the 200-meter butterfly world record at the U.S. World Championships or Trials in Austin, Texas, becomes the ever youngest ever male to set a world mark.
Well, it's probably Phelps v. Spitz in terms of their of America's best ever, and, you know, yeah, then you obviously throw a few more in the mix for overall, but yeah, he's one of the all-time.
I've seen a photo of him with all of his medals.
Oh,
I'm surprised he didn't break his neck with all of them around his neck, because that was, he's certainly an impressive player. All right, let's scoot into the extra time big finish and bring it home quickly.
Extra time big finish.
All right, let's kick off with tennis. Alex de Minaur has reached another milestone in his successful 2024 journey, earning his 18th victory, which is the most of any player so far this year.
He's been consistent, hasn't he? And the way his Australian Open ended, you thought, uh-oh, but, geez, he's, to his credit, he's backed up and kept going, and there's obviously a fair bit of self-belief, and, yeah. So, good on him.
Certainly in a good place off the tennis court as well with his partner, the English player Bolter, I think it is.
Yeah.
And obviously, Leighton Hewitt is obviously working with him as well. So, yeah, absolutely fantastic. Has Andy Murray tried to play on 1 year too long? We've talked about it, obviously, as part of the footballers. But from a tennis point of view, do you think that him breaking down once again is just the signs of that, he has gone on 1 year too long?
Yeah, but you know what? It doesn't tarnish his legacy or anything. I think in footy at the moment, it does a bit. With tennis, good on him.
Do you think that's partly because footy's a team sport and he's an individual sport?
Individual sport. There's no. Rafael Nadal. Are we thinking anything less of him that he keeps trying to come back? No. So I've got no problem with that personally.
No, fair call. All right, let's move on to the NBL, mate. NBL finals goes down to the wire with Tasmania winning 82-77 after coming from the clouds. They're about 15 points down there in game two. And then in game three, a bit of a shot almost on the buzzer.
If you haven't seen the highlights of game three, now I don't mind basketball, but it's not my top sport or top love.
Yes.
But I heard Andrew Gay say that he thought the highlights of game three was the best basketball he's ever seen. So I thought, I'll stumble across it.
Yep.
And I tell you what, it is incredible. Some of the shots in the last, not just the shot to win the game, which is a Hail Mary.
It's a blinder.
It's unbelievable. But it's just incredible. The standard is just ridiculous. I can't say that it blew me away as a non-basketball nut.
Totally agree with you. I'm in the same boat. I've been following it a little bit closely at the moment on the basis that the final series was a little bit different to most series that they've had previously. And, it's game four and game five is, if needed, on the 31st. If it gets to game five, mate, it's going to be one of the all-time great basketball seasons.
Oh, it's been fantastic. So
we'll follow that one up as we go on. NRL, South Sydney haven't started the season well as expected, and pressure is starting to show on the coach after a 48-6 loss to their crosstown rivals.
Yeah, so it's interesting, isn't it? Certainly a fair bit more pressure being added. It wasn't a cliffhanger, was it? So
no. The table is the Cowboys with 3 wins from 3 matches, the Roosters, the Raiders, the Panthers, Sea Eagles, the Eels, the Dolphins, and the Storm rounding out the top 8. Formula One was huge in Melbourne last weekend, with almost 500,000 people attending over the 4 days. Does the TV show Drive to Survive have a little bit to do with that?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. It's probably, I think it's, certainly fantastic attendance. So,
Australians obviously not
featuring.
Sort of doing all that well with the Ricciardo and Piastri. Piastri was a weird one because he was in a position to potentially hit the podium, but team rules, they've told him to pull back.
Yeah.
All right. We move on to some general questions just to finish off. The Olympics, has Brisbane really stuffed this one up badly?
Yeah.
I can't believe
massively.
It.
It's You know, you actually had Tracy Wickham say that she believes that the Olympics now should go to Sydney.
I mean, that's an unbelievable comment in itself, yeah. Just by itself.
And it's just incredible that, look, I think Olympics has got to go right. The amount of money being required here just is ridiculous. Do we go to Greece as the ancient city and build complexes there that it is just the home of the Olympics? I think that is probably the way it has to go, because I think now countries are going, hang on. You just saw Melbourne, and Melbourne blew $300 million with stuffing the Commonwealth Games bid up and all that,
yep.
And that having to then pull out. And at the moment, it's pretty obvious that Brisbane really don't want it. Yeah,
there's something not quite right there. I mean, I know...
Go to one spot.
Countries spend a lot of money to get these events, which is money that could have been spent on venues or, you know, other things within countries. But, you know, everyone's looking at the bottom line these days, and, yeah, something's not adding up here. And if they're trying to pull out of it, yeah, there's something not right. And then you've got greats coming out going, well, it should go back to Sydney. It's like, wow, that's...
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely huge. Is it a case of a country actually taking control of it?
Yeah, I think it is. I think with what's saying, like Greece some events, is the home or whatever. Yeah. I do. I think it has to be in one spot, wherever, because I just think there's just too much money.
Yep.
It just, it's gone. It's gone over. It's obscene.
All right, we'll go back to the AFL a little bit. Was Duday's decision to buy the Crows a huge mistake, considering, you know, they're struggling a little bit on field in the back line and structure-wise. He's going to be the recruit of the year for Brisbane, really.
Hasn't played a game.
I know he hasn't.
Let's also remember how much footy he's missed. Now, I understand why with two knee recos, why Adelaide didn't make the big Godfather offer. And you've also got to then look, well, hang on, if you're going to do that with him, who else are we going to potentially lose from there? So I get where they're coming from.
Yep.
I think he was a pretty outstanding leader. He's a quality person.
Yes.
So I think in that way, you do have to question, and hang on, Brisbane have managed to get Danaher, Neil, recruited Dunkley. So they've spent, and yet they still had room for him as well. So I wonder in that way with Adelaide. Yeah, look, big question mark, because I rated him.
The only reason I say that is that your senior player up forward is Walker, who directs traffic. Yeah. Your senior player through the middle, I won't say in the middle because it was going to be Rory Sloane, obviously, before he got injured, but it was also going to be Dawson as well, exactly. But a senior guy like Sloane on the list is very, very important. And then Duday down back.
Yeah.
That's your spine right there that can potentially just keep these young guys, you know, in, hence the reason why I put it on the run list.
Yeah, I think it's a fair question, because also, especially with Brody Smith falling by the wayside,
yeah. And then to finish us off, the Sydney Swans in the AFLW, a couple of players have come under fire for some drug incidences over the off-season.
Yeah, got two games each. I think they're pretty lucky to only get two.
Because it's not in season.
Yeah.
And this is what I didn't realise, is that the AFLW does not have any drug code.
Yeah, which is...
Which is ridiculous.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. Is it
a case of an afterthought? Like,
we
don't think that this is going to happen from the female's point of view. Definitely from the male's point of view. But
no, not so much that. I think it's how much dollars it costs and where we're allocating money to. I think that's probably more the call. And it now looks to be, hang on.
Absolutely.
You're going to call it, the elite level and spend all that money, what they're paying them. Mm-hmm. That's a debatable issue as it is.
Yep.
Well, surely then you have the same rules.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, mate, we're going to leave the good, the bad, the ugly for this
one. No, I'm going to go on a rant.
Okay, the rule book rant. Yep. Here it is.
I am fed up with events in terms of lunches and that sort of thing, right? That... I will be honest, I've seen two this week. So there's one on the 1984. So the Nord, obviously is a Nord man, 84, and it's being done together with Port at the Nord Tunnel, $180 a ticket. Now, for mine, they're pricing the average punter. No way in the world you can afford that sort of thing. There was another one at $250 a ticket. Now, where in the hell is the ticket for the non-drinker? So, in other words, why in the hell should I, as a non-drinker, spend a couple of $100 to go to a function to have a couple of Cokes and a bit of average food? Yes, you want to hear the speakers and all that. Well, I'm going to be honest. I've probably heard the majority of the story of that sort of thing. Yeah, there's some people I'd love to catch up with. Mm-hmm. But I'm just saying, that's a personal bit. But more the point is, stop pricing them out of the everyday person and, for goodness sake, have a price and a ticket for a non-drinker.
Mm-hmm.
Why should I, as a non-drinker, have to effectively pay and subsidise a drinker? It's bullshit.
There you go, folks. The rulebook rant is back. We'll leave the good, the bad, the ugly for this week because I reckon you've summed it up right there, and we're obviously running out of time. But once again, we thank Daryl Wakeland for his time today. Mate, I thank you once again for your time. Thanks, it's been a huge, huge episode. If you haven't listened to it yet, go back and listen to our SNFL-only episode. Some good insights there from the Glenelg CEO and obviously the Nord player in Jackson Callow. But until next week, we promise to do better, mate.
In this crazy world we live in, we all need the distraction. Enjoying the show? Like, rate, and subscribe. Hook up and connect with us on social media at SportsCastSA. We'll see you next time on Game On.